And thank you for joining the Ashley Webster Experience. I'm here with Brian Solomon and a very special guest. We have a special guest every time, but I mean special guest. His name is Rob O'Neill. He's from Butte, Montana, which, by the way, I'm very familiar with, having lived in Helena, just up the road from Butte, for a number of years. We used to go down there, have great bars. It's at 6,000 plus feet. It was always colder, always snowing, even in July. But I loved it down there. And this is where Rob O'Neill came from. It's where you were born, isn't
it? It is,
that right,
yeah.
Rob?
Thank you, guys, for having me, too. Helena's nice. And I can tell you're not full of it because you pronounced it right. Everyone says Helena.
I know. Well, it was Helena. Have a Helena day. Yeah. That was the slogan. And I love Montana.
I was just looking at property up there in between Helena, Montana, and Great Falls, Montana. Yeah. There's a little place called Cascade, Montana.
Yes, no, it was.
And there's riverfront property right there, not as bad as near, like, Bozeman
or Kalispell.
It's right
off the 15, right? Mm-hmm. It's right off the interstate.
Because it's not near a major airport, and it's not near a major ski resort, so the riverfront is just really
cool. It's gorgeous. If you like to, you know, fly fish and all
that. Oh, yeah, all that stuff, too. Plus, you can get like a peninsula on the river, so when the big war starts, you can defend yourself, whatever that means.
I met my fair share of survivalists in Montana, let me tell you. It was fascinating. I did stories with the Montana National Guard, and they would fly.
Yeah, they're right there.
They would fly over sections of forest, and on the walls, they would have areas blacked out, and they wouldn't fly over them because they were getting shot at. Because
really?
Survivalists thought they were part of the New World Order, and when you look up, their green helicopters look black. They would get fired at. So they just said, rather than mess around with them,
just don't fly there.
Just don't fly there.
Well, there's crazies on the right. There's crazies on the left. That's proof of it right there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't care what your side of the aisle is. Don't shoot at the helicopter. Chances are you're not being invaded. We did a training trip like that when I was in the Navy to Portland, the People's Republic of Portland, and we had our little birds. They're small helicopters, and then we had Blackhawks, and they're all black. They're black helicopters, not because you're going to blend in. Whatever, they're just black because I think it's cool. And there was a big problem in the newspaper that was talking about, you know, invasion here, and they're talking about the black helicopters are here, and like. It was when Bush was president, and they're like, they're finally invading. It's like, we don't need to invade Oregon. We got it already.
Put a wall around Oregon. Actually, you know what?
People get nuts over that stuff, too. We're just training here because this is our country, and we want our guys to be able to fly through buildings.
Right.
We had a great operation, too, planned into jumping into Salem, the capital of Oregon. It got shut down because if they saw helicopters, imagine if they see like a bunch of Navy SEALs. That's definitely it.
They're all diving to the coffee shops and then just hiding.
John Kerry lost, and we're here to prove it.
If you haven't realized by now, I didn't do a very good job of introducing Rob. Rob, well, you were a member of SEAL Team 6. You're a Navy SEAL. I said you were born in Montana. I guess my question to you was, and we'll get to obviously the remarkable mission that you went on, and we'll talk about that involving Osama bin Laden. But I just want to go back to Montana. How did you get from being raised in Montana into the military, and in particular into the Navy SEALs?
A lot of luck. I tried. Well, life is what happens around you while you're planning.
Yes.
And most of the stuff you worry about never happens anyway. So think about something that really bothered you other than taxes last April, a year ago. So April 2018, does it really matter now? Probably not. So the stuff you're stressing about doesn't happen, life, all that good stuff. Because my plan was to stay in Montana, get a degree, work for my dad. I got dumped by a girl. The first part of my book, it's the very first sentence, says, I owe my career as a Navy SEAL to a girl. So I went.
She broke your heart.
Yeah, and it's time to leave town. And the more I traveled, too, I learned that a lot of people, it doesn't matter where you're from, people always say, I just got to get out of here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was it. The quickest way out of Butte, Montana, is to join the Marine Corps. And so I tried to join the Marine Corps,
and he wasn't there. No, the recruiter.
No, again, luck. It's better to be lucky than good sometimes.
Yeah.
And I went into the Navy guy's office because he was there, and I asked him why the Marine wasn't there, and he said, why do you want the Marine? Typical recruiter. Well, I said, I want to be a sniper. He said, no problem. We have snipers here in the Navy. And I didn't know anything. He said, all you got to do is become a Navy SEAL first, then we'll send you.
And
so
that
I
was
joined.
That.
I didn't know how to swim. Nothing. He didn't care.
Didn't know how to swim, but he joined the Navy.
Yeah. Well, because he wasn't worried about my well-being. He was worried about his quota as a recruiter. And a lot of guys don't join the Navy from Montana because that's what we call landlocked.
But you had learned to shoot, I would imagine.
I knew how to shoot. That's why I wanted to be a
Marine. And that's why you wanted to be a sniper.
Yeah, well, we used to hunt elk in Montana where elk are so smart. If you don't some people will disagree, but if you don't get an elk within the first 10 minutes of light, you're probably not going to get one all day until the sun comes down.
Were you the guy to put elk urine on himself?
Yeah,
and
yeah. Walk into,
was conscious of which way the wind was blowing?
The wind is, that's serious. Yeah. If an elk smells you, it's worse than shooting at them. Yeah. They're gone.
They are out of there.
But the point is, like, if we wanted to get them in the mountain, we'd have to know how to hike up mountains in the dark. Because like you have to no, you can't use night vision. The fish and wildlife they frown on that. The park rangers are they'll take your truck, but you have to know how to navigate your way using either a compass or stars.
Are you doing this in the snow in the cold?
Oh yeah, and everything, and just knowing where I think the elk would come up, using the wind to my advantage, and catching them instead of catching them on, like an ambush as opposed to them seeing me. And so just doing that, knowing how to shoot long distances using wind, shooting over valley, shooting angles. I figured I would be a good sniper, and Marines are on the land, and that's why I'll join the Marine Corps.
So would you say hunting animals helped you be a better soldier?
It did. It did, yeah. It teaches hunting anything living. They have a will to live, and it taught me respect for life, too. You know, it's one of the – I never bow hunted because I thought it was cruel to the animal. Mm. I mean, people do it fine, but I don't have any interest in it. I'm going to try to get there. If it's a kill, it's a clean kill. But, just getting out there amongst them, watching them, how they respond to each other, how they respond to people. Mm. It's one of those things in Montana you just do.
So, you do. I always remember sitting at the traffic lights in Helena, and I'd look to the right, and there'd be a deer splayed out on the hood of the truck next to me.
Did you ever go hunting?
With the tongue lolling
out
the
side. Yeah, that's the first thing they do. You know what's cool, too, in some of those places in Montana, especially the elk, is they realize where they're not getting shot at, so they'll come into the cities. And there's towns in Montana where they live on the football field of the local high school.
Wow. Smart.
They're not getting touched.
Yeah. These elk are smart. I always said it, they really got their act together. They're more elk than people.
And then the second the season's over, they're everywhere. They know you can't do anything to them. That's serious. I've seen them do it.
Okay, so you get into the Navy.
Yes.
You get into the Navy SEAL program.
Yeah.
What was that like? I mean, we know how difficult it is. You have to go through?
When I joined... And then I found out what was expected of me. I had 5 months to learn how to swim. 5 months before I left, from the time I joined to the time I departed. So I had to learn how to swim. And I just got an attitude like, look, I'm definitely leaving Montana. I get to see what Navy boot camp's like in Great Lake, Illinois. Mm. I will get to Coronado, San Diego, and I'll live there. And I probably won't make it through this training, but who cares? I got to try it out, and if I get kicked out, because I'm not going to quit. I just decided that just simply because everyone told me I wasn't good enough, so I'm not going to make them right. But when I get kicked out, I'll go to this fleet. I'll see the world on a ship, and in 4 years, I come back to Butte, Montana, hang out at Maloney's Pub and tell sea stories. I also learned in the Navy that they're saying should be see the world from about 15 miles away. Kind of stay out there. But just a positive attitude, and I learned how to achieve long-term goals through short-term goals. My goal is not to get even to Friday. My goal is to get to lunch. And then after lunch, I'm going to get to dinner. And then dinner, they'll let me sleep eventually. So I'm going to do everything they asked me to do to get back in that bed. And then when I get done with today, because I made my bed the right way in the morning, tomorrow's a clean slate and a fresh start. And it doesn't matter what happened today. I made it to tomorrow. And I even tell I talk a lot around the country. I talk to businesses. I talk to companies. I talk to sports teams. I love talking to especially college football teams because I'll tell them that the best advice I have for everyone is get over it. So when it's second and 15, it doesn't matter who missed their assignment. Mm. It doesn't matter what the incomplete pass. It's just second and 15. We're here. Let's move forward. Get over it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We can talk about it when the game's over and learn from it. But right now, worrying about what just happened, worrying why we're here.
Is that something you learned in the service really built on that?
Oh, yeah. On the Bin Laden raid. I was on the helicopter that didn't crash, but I was on the one that got let out in the wrong spot. So I didn't know they crashed inside. And when we were going to blow up the front door, I thought they took fire and did like a racetrack. They flew a loop to get back in the fight. Mm. So we're going to blow it. I just put an explosive device on the front door of the main compound. So the one the cars go in and out of, like a driveway. Mm-hmm. And I told them we're going to blow it up. And they said, don't blow it up. We'll just open it. I didn't know they were in there. The door opens. The thumb came out. And I remember thinking, now I could ask them how they got there. But it doesn't matter because
they're there,
and I'm wasting time. They're just there. Let's talk about it. Hopefully we live and we talk about
so
it.
So we're talking about May 2nd, 2011.
Yep.
This is the raid on Bin Laden's compound in Pakistan. You were briefed. Did you know how long before you left did you know you were going?
About 3 weeks.
3 weeks. You knew that he was the target.
Yeah. When they finally told us it was the target, we wondered why we weren't going today.
Right.
We're ready now. Let's go now. Mm-hmm. He's in there. And the people that found him were ready for us to go, too.
But you were training for a lot longer than that for this mission, right?
No, 3 weeks. I mean, we'd been training for that forever, and we'd been to combat so many times before that, and we were ready to do anything because you don't want to assume you're going into a situation knowing the plan. Well, you know the plan, but you're going to have your preparation because as soon as you think, like if someone said, as soon as you go in the front door, there's going to be a hallway to your right, the hallway's going to be to your left when you get there.
Yeah.
So don't plan on that, what you can't see. Just get there and assess it. Don't assume something's going to be a certain
way. So when you are in the chopper, you're flying towards the compound. I'm assuming it's the middle of the night. There's two choppers?
Yep.
What's going through your head at that moment?
That we could get shot down in any second, but me worrying about it isn't going to affect it. If I sit there and tremble about a missile that could blow us up at any second, it's not going to stop the missile, so don't worry about it. Don't waste
that
energy.
Is your adrenaline pumping?
No, I was counting. Counting is from 0 to 1,000.
You just wanted to get there and get it.
It's just like, just living the moment, thinking about, you know, looking at my friends. We learned that, again, worrying about, don't waste your emotions on stupid stuff. You can't affect it. Stop worrying about it. So, like, I was looking around the helicopter, being so proud of everybody, but some of my guys were asleep. Which I just think is ice
now,
cold.
That's being relaxed.
Yeah, it's like you're on the ride to Osama bin Laden's house and you're asleep.
Well, how long was the flight?
90 minutes.
That's quite a long time. That's an hour and a half. It's to think about all the different scenarios.
It's not even thinking about the scenarios because we know what we're doing. And this isn't even a hard target. It's just a long flight. So we're going to get there. And we've rehearsed this so many times. We know every possible. It's like reflection on how did we all get here? Thinking about this is the same group that rescued Captain Richard Phillips. A lot of these guys were the same guys that went
played
to rescue the
Tom
lone survivor.
Hanks, but yeah. Played by Tom Hanks in the movie, the giant cargo ship.
Yeah. Were you
on that mission too?
Yeah, I was the lead jumper. I was the first one to jump out of the airplane to go get him. I didn't shoot, but I got there, and we all came up with a different plan how to get him.
Wow, you've been on some very interesting missions.
I was my first overseas deployment with SEAL Team 6 was one of the missions was to go after Marcus Luttrell, the lone survivor. We were on the mountain for that. And then same group of guys, we were also on the base when Bo Bergdahl walked off. And we were so close to rescuing him. We did about 19 missions because they were the locals caught him. They sold him to the Taliban. They wanted to get him to Haqqani over in Pakistan. So we're chasing him the whole time trying to catch up to him.
He walked off by himself.
He walked off by himself. But once, you know, he realized a horrible decision. And we're trying to rescue him. I mean, he's an idiot. Mm-hmm. But he's an American idiot, and you know we can get him back.
Back.
At least we get him back in our prison, where it's humane. You know.
Well, so the Bin Laden raid, how was that unique compared to all these other high profile raids that you were involved in?
Longer flight, and there wasn't any chance to refuel. So we had to have the right amount of fuel, which means the certain amount of time on the ground, which means we need to be out of here at this point. Or else we're not going to make it back. That was our original plan, and then we can't. You know, a lot of people don't realize when you go on a long flight, like a mission in Iraq, you're going to stop. You're going to be able to stop at forward operating bases that have refueling stations. But when you fly into Pakistan, especially when they don't know you're coming, you can't stop at a sit-go. you're in it.
Were you expecting some sort of resistance?
Yeah, I thought the house was going to blow up. I thought we'd die. I thought we'd die inside the house. That's what I would have bet. Even when we were, I was on the rooftop team. We were going to put a team down in the front yard. We were going to put a team on the outside with snipers, an interpreter, and a canine. Mm-hmm. And then my team was going to go on the rooftop, and we're going to work our way of like jumping off the roof onto the balcony. And we're going to try to hit them on the third floor, and the other team's coming up. And our team, like maybe seven of us that were getting on the rooftop, I told them the house is probably going to blow up as soon as we get there. We were actually calling ourselves.
They're saying, thanks, we're up.
No, we all knew it. And we were calling ourselves the Martyrs Brigade. Like, we're going to die on top of this house. But if it blows up, he did it himself, and we're going to die with him. That's what we came for.
So you get there, you find out, you didn't know that one of the choppers had actually gone down.
I didn't know until we got in the house. And one
of
the guys told me.
Now, no one was badly injured on that helicopter. They managed to get
to
the ground.
Yeah, they were good because they didn't crash. The flight lead, the main pilot, crash landed.
Okay.
Because he knew when he tried to hover that he couldn't hold a hover. And had he been a less experienced pilot, he would have tried to power up, able to roll that killed everyone aboard because they would have crashed head first. He knew if he spun it, he could probably put the tail on the mud wall, pin the nose to the ground, and stick it, and he stuck it.
Wow.
And we were fortunate. The Army gave us the four best pilots in the Army, which coincidentally are the four best pilots in the world. The best helicopter pilots are Army pilots. They're the best.
All right, so they get in. You, as you said earlier, managed to get through the door because suddenly a thumb comes around. They're in. They open the door. Yeah. You don't have to blow through. Did you know prior to this who was going where? And did you know you were going to go?
No. Sort of. We knew about the guest house, which is there was a family living there, and I think the courier. Mm. No. One of the brothers. There were two brothers, a courier and the brother. They were working for Bin Laden before 9/11 and after. We knew they had that. We knew there was like an animal stable, another carport, the main house, and a few places. So we knew which guys were going to the main houses, and we'd all link up eventually. Mm. We knew where command and control was going to go, and we had redundancy with a couple different radios that could talk back to the United States because they were monitoring, obviously. They couldn't see it, but we were given a pro word. That's how Geronimo came up.
Yeah.
We didn't name Bin Laden Geronimo. As a pro word for we found him. It was never insulting the warrior Geronimo to name Bin Laden that. It was a pro word in honor of the warrior Geronimo, who was an American.
So you fly into the doors. You don't know who's really where because it's dark. You're wearing night vision goggles.
Yeah, but we can see.
You got all of that. You can see. Yeah. So the first thing you do is what? You go up the stairs? Do you clear each
floor? You got to clear everything as you go. You never want to go upstairs in an urban environment without clearing the level that you're on. So because my helicopter landed outside, I didn't go on the roof. I was able to be in the back of the line, and I was watching everyone. So I was lucky to get the best seat in the house for the pretty much the coolest mission in modern history. So I'm watching my guys work and just being proud of them. Mm. Like, we all know the house can blow up, but no one's stopping to worry about it. They're just doing their jobs. So, and we're slowly escalating force. And there's resistance. A few people were killed.
Were just guards outside?
Enemy. Yep. Family members. Guards inside.
Guards inside.
Yeah, we were able to get the drop on them even though we crashed. Because we're so good at, like, TV does a bad job and movies do a bad job. But once the gunfights start, everyone starts screaming and yelling and go. And everyone's yelling, hallway, clear that. Shut up.
That's not
you're
not
reality. Helping. Just because you're talking does not mean you're communicating. If you go around a corner and your gun points up, I'm assuming you're at a stairwell. You don't need to yell stairwell. You can might as well just start yelling, "Hey, we're here, USA." You know. A couple of fights and then we were quiet and they knew someone was inside. Tell me to get him, but we didn't make it apparent where we were. So that they must have been scared.
Was this a big building?
Three stories.
Three stories. Mm-hmm.
What?
I
5,000 square feet.
Not even that much. Maybe 4,000 square feet.
All right, a lot of little rooms.
Yeah, little rooms. And then the second floor was like a bedroom and a few offices. And then the third floor was all Osama bin Laden and his wife.
So take me through how you got up this.
The first set of stairs, we were informed by the group of women who found bin Laden that Khalid bin Laden would be on the stairs. And he would be armed. And he is a threat. So get ready for him on the
stairs.
He's
the brother.
He was the son.
The son.
So he's 20 or 21 years old.
All right.
And if we got past him, then we would find Osama on the third floor. And that's what the analysts said, and they were very, very correct. So I was in the back, and I was watching him go up the stairs and just being quiet, watching the way they kind of pulled him out by talking to him, confusing Khalid. He came out. He was armed, and he was a threat, so he was engaged by one or two of the guys up front, and then we went around the corner to the second floor. And then you asked if we cleared the floors. The guys in front of me all cleared the second floor, and there were some women there, and I became the one guy pointing up. He stayed focused on the threat, which would be the third floor, and everyone between us went right and left, so that I was the last guy, and I became the number two man. So there's two of us, one looking up, one. And my job was to hold onto his shoulder, keep positive control, just to let him know he doesn't need to look back because he needs to hold security.
Right.
In case someone pops out. And when I squeeze him, it means I am looking behind us. Squeeze means we have enough. And I wanted four more to go with us. I would have settled for two more, but they didn't show up because we were spread too thin. He started saying that we got to get up because at the top of the stairs there was a curtain that we could sort of see through, and there were people moving, and he assumed they were suicide bombers. Mm. Right. And he didn't know it was me, but he obviously knew it was one of his guys, and he just started saying stuff that we really need. What he's telling me is we can beat them. If they're putting on vests, if we go now, we can beat them.
Right, but we need to go now.
And we need to go right now. And I can close my eyes and see it. The stairs. I remember the thought in my head was not bravery, not let's do this. It was more of a, we are going to blow up when we go up these stairs, and I'm just tired of thinking about it. Let's get it over with. He was brave. I was like, I'm here. Yeah, might as well go up the last set of stairs.
Might as well finish
this
off.
And so we went up, and he moved the curtain, and there were people there. He assumed were bombers, and it was so fast, he sort of jumped on them to absorb it. So maybe he could take all the blast. Like a guy jumping on a grenade that didn't go off.
Wow.
Well, why didn't he just shoot them?
Well, because they weren't necessarily. If he shot him, it was wrong. It's not worth. It's a. I don't know. It's a very, very. It's a fast decision. Yeah. Okay. His decision was to move them.
Yeah,
and maybe he recognized were women.
Female?
I don't know.
These were females.
Yeah,
they were
the two females. Mm. And just because he went that way to cover his back, I had to turn right. I turned right, and there's Osama bin Laden standing there, 3 feet away. And his wife Amal was in front of him, and he was sort of pushing her towards me.
He pushed his wife in.
He was. I don't know what he was doing. If you read Amal did an interview that's pretty fascinating. She gives her version of the story, and it exactly matches my version of the story from opposite directions.
Huh.
And she was just saying that something like that he told her, they're not here for you, they're here for me. And
interesting.
And her story is really cool.
Do you think he was trying to push her out of the way or push her towards you?
I don't know what he was thinking. All I know is if he would have surrendered, if he would have had his hands up and we could see, or I could see that he wasn't wearing a suicide vest, we're taking him. But this is a kill capture mission, and it's a very high probability that we're going to die with him. So he had about a half a second to convince me not to kill him, and he didn't. And he was a threat to all of us. If he blows up, he might be connected to a house-borne improvised explosive device that kills everyone. I had to shoot him where I shot him, which is right in the face 3 times. Because I've dealt with suicide bombers before. People don't die for real like they do in the movies. They have a will to live, and if you shoot them in the chest, they're alive for a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Shoot them where they need to be shot in the face, they drop. It's over
it's
before
a dumb
they know
deal.
It. And a suicide bomber is simple as connecting maybe two leads that are one on each wrist, like they look like a little battery for a remote control, and then everything goes up, and it's all over.
What went through your mind prior to you shooting him? Did you say, oh, my God, Osama bin Laden? Did you have time to think that?
The one thing I remember specifically was how skinny he was. Then I remember how tall he was. Then I remember that his beard was gray, and he was not surrendering, and I saw his nose, and it's like, that's him, and he's a threat, and he's got to die now. But it was so fast.
Just like that.
Yeah. It didn't hit me until, because I grabbed the wife and put her on the bed, because I killed him at the foot of his bed. He fell that way, so his head was at a little left of center of the middle of the bed. I could hear him take his last breath. I remember that. And I put his wife on the bed, and then his young kid was there, his young son, like a 2 or 3. And I remember thinking, as a father, this poor kid has nothing to do with this at all. Picked him up, put him next to his mom, and then other SEALs are coming in the room, and that's what hit me. And one of my guys came up, and SEALs are just really, they're so very modest guys. When the sniper that initiated the fire on Captain Phillips, when I talked to him and I said, you've just done the most historic thing in the history of the teams, the SEAL teams. Mm. And he said, awesome. Can we go home? Just nonchalant. So when this happened, one of my guys came up to me and I'm standing there and he said, hey, are you okay? And I said, I don't think so. What do we do now? And he laughed and he goes, well, now we find the computers.
Right.
And I was like, oh. And he goes, we've done this every night for years, hundreds of times. Yeah. I said, yeah, you're right. And he goes, yeah, you just killed Osama bin Laden. Let's get to work. It's like, Can we just
did you
have
comprehend
a second?
That? Yeah.
Yeah, it hit me. And then we did, went to work. And then we
were
left.
You still worried that there could have been a explosive?
No, not
in there
at that
point.
No, no. Now it turned from we might
no
blow up to
traps.
Now we might live. We got this. Let's get what we can get and leave.
So then what happens? You have to take the body out.
Yeah. We got to put him in a body bag, which someone else did. They got the pictures that people are always, the conspiracy theorists are like, just show us, if no pictures, it didn't happen. The pictures are out there. Mm. They'll get released eventually. Some guys put them in a body bag. I went down to the second floor to help clear the 3 offices. We got as much intel as we could. I went back up, helped 3 other guys carry the body bag. We brought it out down the stairs, outside. The sniper outside that was holding security was actually the sniper that initiated the fire on the Captain Phillips raid. So that's how small this community is.
Wow.
And we gave him to him, and then another helicopter with SEALs in it came in to get us. We put the original team on the helicopter. We came in with the body. We took some DNA. We split up because redundancy again.
Yeah.
They're going this way. We're going that way. And then we have 90 minutes to fly out. If we don't get shot down, we live.
How long from the moment you landed to the moment you take off with the body?
47 minutes.
47 minutes.
Yeah, we were shooting for 34, but we kind of got caught up.
So what was going through your mind? What was being said as
Nothing.
You're leaving?
Nothing. I saw the guy... I saw the guy that was tweeting. There's a famous guy that was tweeting, why are they doing military exercises on a Sunday night? I think in the Pakistan military.
All right.
So we saw his face was lit up with his own camera or his own phone. And if Twitter was as popular then as it is now, everyone would have known what was going on. But no one knew. Mm. And I remember looking at that guy We're not in a war zone. If we just took, if we had just taken down a target in Iraq, we can shoot someone with a cell phone out because chances are they're blowing up a car bomb. It's and they shouldn't be there anyway. But this guy's tweeting, and I saw him from less than 100 meters, and I remember thinking, this guy has no idea who no one knows we're here.
Jeez.
And then we just left, and then no one said anything because we don't want to jinx it. We have 90 minutes to fly.
When did you hear from the White House? You say they were monitoring the whole thing from the White House's, which they do because you guys have cameras on.
We heard from them when we got back. I'm assuming that Admiral McRaven, who was kind of overseeing the whole thing, I know I talked to him, but he talked to the ground force commander. I'm sure they were talking back and forth to the three-letter agency who was relaying it to the White House. And then we went up to Bagram Airfield where the law enforcement guys, FBI guys were there. We brought the body with us. They were doing DNA. We were taking out all the stuff that we got out of the house, and they were going over it, and we were getting ready to eat breakfast. Army brought us these big breakfast sandwiches, and we had the TV on. And it was actually on Fox News, and we were watching Geraldo. And he was kind of running around saying urgent, confirmed, and they're saying Bin Laden's dead, but the president hadn't confirmed it yet because some of our guys were still on the phone with the president. They were trying to go over numbers, how many were killed, how many were alive, who's left behind, and is it really him? And then we're sitting there.
So you're having breakfast. It's still sinking in.
We're still
like,
in our uniforms.
Oh, my God.
We're still in our uniforms. Bin Laden's body's laying 10 feet away. And the cops are – not the cops, but the federal law enforcement guys are going over – the experts are going over everything. And I'm eating a breakfast sandwich. We have the TV on, and President Obama walks down the long red carpet, and he said, "Tonight I can report to the American people and to the world the United States conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al Qaeda." And I heard him say Osama bin Laden. I look at Osama bin Laden, and I thought, "How in the world did I get here from Butte, Montana?"
Was there a sense of this was the face of 9/11?
Yeah,
and it felt good.
This is going to help with the healing process.
Right.
That we proved that no matter what they do to us, we have the capability to go get them and serve justice. And that was it. We were aware that the war is not over. The ideology is not over. And there's a lot more to it. But this is just a don't mess around with us too much.
Are you concerned in the since this has happened that your name is out there? Have you been criticized for putting your name out there, saying yes, this was me? And
well,
what was your thinking?
I think you'll get criticized for anything. Mm. Anything you do, someone's not gonna. Especially with a lot of one of my jokes with Navy SEALs. Time heals everything. And at the time, the most important thing is what people are saying. But once you kind of get over it, it's fine. But one of the things that I came up with, because I've seen it, and I have nothing but I have nothing but good things to say about my community that I came from, the Navy, my Army counterparts, everyone in the military and the agencies. But especially with SEALs, I said, if you took 10 random Navy SEALs' houses and put a dump truck full of money in each of their driveways and you just dumped it out, three of them are going to complain that their driveways are blocked. So they're gonna criticize, and there's the stuff comes with it. But after being,
is there a code of silence among Navy SEAL members?
No, I'm not the first Navy SEAL to write a book. I know so many guys that are my age that have already retired, joined because of Richard Marcenko. He wrote Rogue Warrior, Point Man by Patches Watson. Someone said, isn't there a code of conduct and an ethos? Like, yeah, I read about that in about 50 Navy SEAL books. It's ridiculous.
Also, I would imagine for the victims' families of 9/11, you've met with them, haven't
you? That's part of the reason that I came public with it as big as I did. Because when I got back, everyone in the community, every Navy SEAL that knew a Navy SEAL, the first thing they said, including to me, is who got him? Mm-hmm. And then everyone on the mission knew. And again, it was never supposed to be me. A braver man than me, knowing tactics, someone smarter invented. I turned left. I turned right. He turned left. That's it. But everyone said, well, don't tell anybody, but. And they'll say my name. And then they would tell a buddy, but don't say anything, but. So in Virginia Beach and San Diego, D.C., parts of New York, people already knew. And you can't get that toothpaste back in the tube. And then it started to come out. And then I donated some stuff to the 9/11 memorial in Lower Manhattan. And now that a lot of guys are out, too, they're starting to donate stuff to a new exhibit they're putting up, which is – I love it. I hope everybody, including the pilots and the air crew, tell their stories about the Bin Laden raid. There's going to be about 28 different stories that everyone should know. I think we're all pretty happy that George Washington brought a biographer across the Delaware to fight the Hessians.
Of the movies out there, and I've seen movies of this, but of the – that you were in on the raid on bin Laden, are they generally accurate?
No, they did a really good job in Zero Dark Thirty of showing the analysts.
Okay.
And the woman, Maya, portrayed a few different women. It was one character based on a few. They did an excellent job of the way she would write the number on the boss's window. This is how many days we've known where he is. And when she yelled at the SEALs, I didn't want to send you anyway. I want to bomb the place. I don't know why you're... That was what she was like. But she was 100% right about everything. Yeah. And she was just frustrated because she knew she was right.
Yeah.
Captain Phillips, great movie because it portrayed SEALs in the right light.
Yeah.
The guys, as soon as they shot, they didn't high five. They put the bipods up, they left.
Yep.
And that's how good they were. I really like Captain Phillips. Lone Survivor is excellent. My only complaint about Lone Survivor is they couldn't make the mountain steep enough. I think they filmed it in New Mexico. The mountains are incredible, but they're steeper.
It was a very tense movie.
Oh, that movie is awesome. And Marcus's will to live is second to none.
Yeah.
And his brothers fighting next to him, even though they're dying.
Yeah.
With Lieutenant Mike Murphy exposing himself because the only communication was an Iridium telephone. He knew if he got a call off, someone could help his guy. He's going to get killed. Yeah. He did that award of the Medal of Honor. American Sniper did a really good job of showing the effects of war on families.
Mm-hmm.
I was like everyone in the theater with the fake baby when you hear Bradley Cooper had the doll, and you can hear the theater go, But they showed Chris Kyle every single deployment. It got worse for him at home to the point where he wouldn't even go home. He went to the bar and started drinking.
Yeah.
And I have friends now, and I'm not name dropping, like Dakota Meyer, Medal of Honor Supreme Marine.
Yeah.
Well, we talk about the further away from combat you get, the more into real life, the more you realize how messed up war is.
Yeah.
And so
must have gone through that.
Yeah.
And all of those stages.
And it gets the further you get away, the worse it is. Not that it's scary, you just realize, man, they were asking a lot out of us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Sniper did a great job with that. So it's, they do a pretty good job with some of the movies, and they have to Hollywood it up. If they made war movies, how the missions went, it would be a boring movie because we're pretty much in and out, and it's over.
So now, you're a motivational speaker.
Yes.
You mentioned a little bit of that earlier. You speak to college football teams, but people want to hear your story.
Yes, because it relates to life.
Hmm.
We were a really good team because we were good to each other. And yelling at your subordinates is not going to make them work harder. Figuring out why they're here, what's their motivation. The buck stops here, but I want you to want to come to work. And I've seen teams that have really high morale, really low morale, and the efficiency is really there when morale is high. And effective communication. For some reason, and this might have started with the movies, they want to compartmentalize everything, and people really love to say, well, you don't need to know. That's nonsense. If your people know what they're doing but why they're doing it, they're going to be better. Tell them why.
And these are the lessons that you can teach
yes.
companies
yeah.
as you travel across this country. I'm sure you've traveled far and wide to pass on these things that you've learned,
and
the discipline and how morale plays
a
big role.
It's not going to go the way you expected it to go. Adapt and overcome. You're going to learn from mistakes. Guess what? You're going to screw up. It's okay. And the other thing, too, that I love to hear, I don't know where they get this, is no fear. It's like if anyone that's been to combat tells you they weren't afraid, they're either lying about their experience or they're a complete sociopath.
Yeah.
And that's pretty. People, and they don't want the answer. They're like, weren't you afraid? It's like, I was afraid every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's okay because
that's human.
It's human nature, and fear makes you think more clearly. When you're afraid, you got your stuff together.
Yeah,
you're thinking of it. You got it. I got it. Like when you're at home by yourself and something creaks, you can hear it.
Yeah.
It'll wake you up.
Yeah.
So I know you don't speak a lot about politics, but since the Bin Laden raid, ISIS has grown, and now President Trump has basically annihilated them in Syria. What do you think of what's happened since that raid in the way right now we're looking at all these bombers in Europe, but yet. So it's growing in Europe, and it's shrinking in Syria because of
it's
President
shrinking
Trump's
in
action.
Syria, but it's the ideology. It's not the physical caliphate.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was rushing to Raqqa, Syria, because that was the caliphate. That's the end of times.
Mm-hmm.
But once we proved that it's not, now they're going to try to get back. And you see it all the time. They're trying to get back in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
They're letting them. A lot of them back to Canada. Mm-hmm. They're bringing these ISIS guys back in here, and now they realize the attacks can be with the trucks, with the knives, with all that stuff, and so even when we started fighting in Syria, okay, they went to Yemen, they went to Egypt, they went to Somalia. We're not going to, as a coalition, and by a coalition, I'm talking all of us,
mm-hmm.
we're not
mm-hmm.
going to beat them by bombing them. we need to beat this radical ideology with the help of Muslims. And I've seen it before with the United Arab Emirates. And they declared CARE a terrorist organization, I think, in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And it's those – look at Dubai.
Yeah.
They realized that we can have the Western world in tourism. We can also have Islam. This does not need to be the Wahhabist ideology from how many, you know, a thousand years ago. They don't have to be separate things.
No. It can be fine.
They need to get with – I mean, and they'll say, well, the Christians were brutal. Yeah. They were really brutal, but we're kind of getting around that now. And we're not stoning people to death because they don't agree in our version of Catholicism.
Yeah.
So we need help of a lot of Muslims to get with the time. And a lot of them want to. A lot of them are tired of this.
Yeah.
One of the best compliments I ever got after his speech is I had a guy come up and say, I'm a Muslim American. I'm really proud of you right now. And that's just awesome.
Yeah,
and again, too. I'm fortunate with the public speaking. I get to talk to thousands of people personally a week, and they're a lot more good people than there are bad people.
We tend to forget that.
Yeah, well, because a lot of cable news likes the fighting because it's ratings.
Yeah.
But no one cares about the ratings when there's a hurricane in Texas. Everyone shows up to help each other.
Yes.
So it can be defeated. People said to me, I was on an interview today, and they said, well. There's a lot of bad people out there. And I was like, yeah, there's a lot of good people too, though.
Yeah. There's always going to be a threat,
yeah.
Right? Always.
Always.
Especially to our way of life.
Like you said, I mean,
it's
someone shooting at the helicopter. Someone disagreeing with someone beating up someone because they don't like their way of life.
Right. It's always going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But how is life outside of the service now? You spend a lot of time talking about your experiences, but you were recently married.
Yes.
Life is good.
Life is great, yeah. It's good. The transition to the private sector was the hardest part. I'm a founder of yourgratefulnation.org, where we transition. Right now, it's special operators to the private sector, which is good because I know a lot of men and women who would rather go back to war than fill out a resume because war makes sense. They don't realize their quality. Like, I've had guys tell me, I was like, hey, we're going to get you a job somewhere like in New York or Chicago. And they said, I'm not qualified for anything. I know how to go in a room and shoot a bunch of people. And I'm like, well, yeah, and you're exceptional at that. However, getting there,
But they know a lot of other skills that they don't even know they have.
The teamwork, the communication, the loyalty.
Yes.
The stress management.
Yep.
And I've had employers say that with a lot of the nonsense being taught on universities, I'd rather hire a veteran with these skill sets, these people skills. And I'll teach them my job, and then they'll just do it. And they do this, and they're putting a lot of these guys in managerial-level positions. Mm. And it's like a 90 – Your Grateful Nation's got like a 99% attrition rate for promotion. And we do it individualized. We start off with a veteran. Where do you want to live? What industry? Then we find that industry. 9 months of mentorship, and then they hire them. And I'm talking about these guys are hiring some of the pilots that flew us.
Yeah.
Some of the Rangers, Green Berets, Navy SEALs. Why wouldn't you want them?
Well, you're talking about the elite of the elite,
yeah.
Right? And then you bring them back into this part of the world, you know? I would imagine a lot of them are probably overqualified because you take – those jobs are such high stress. They are – you have to be able to think so fast. So it seems like if you brought them back into an office job, that those – environments might be too easy.
No, it's they're still dealing with people and they're still leading. They don't mind. The funniest part is that when they realize what they're actually worth, they get their first paycheck that's not a military paycheck. And then again, just funny what time of year it is now when they actually realize on April 15th what their fair share is. The first time, by the way, that whole thing with getting money back, that's not getting anything back. You're going to cut a check to what we call the Department of Revenue.
Good old Uncle Sam.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But don't worry, he'll spend it properly.
So you mentioned you were to bring this whole full circle, if you like. You've been up in Montana. You're looking for some property. Is that somewhere where you would like to eventually return to?
Yes, eventually I'd like to get up there, retire up there. Yeah, between there and a beachy type area.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't think I'd like to have access to cities and stuff. I love Florida.
Yeah, well, hey, that's
so
a
you
good.
Don't miss, you don't
low
miss
the, taxes.
You don't miss
sunshine.
The Middle East.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm good.
You want to
see the Middle East?
Yeah, you want to go back to? Do
no,
you miss that?
No, I'm good.
You're done.
If I need to see a pyramid, I'm going to go to the Luxor in Las Vegas.
Yeah,
the buffet's way better there than in Cairo.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Rob O'Neill, cool. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
A remarkable experience. from a Butte boy. It's been real pleasure to speak to you, and thanks for coming
thanks,
by.
Thanks, Ashley. Thanks,
American
Brian, for
hero.
Sure. Well, yeah, thank you. I work with heroes, hero. That's for sure. Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks for everyone listening in. We'll see you back here next time.
I'm Charles Payne. Listen to my Unstoppable Prosperity podcast so I can get you making money right now. Whether stocks are hitting new all-time highs or in freefall mode, opportunities abound. So why are so many potential investors still sitting on the sidelines? In a new season of my podcast, I'm going to get you in the game. After 38 years on Wall Street, I'm ready to impart some lessons and get you invested in the greatest wealth-generating machine in history. Listen anytime, everywhere at foxbusinesspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.